listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host for the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have singer-songwriter is sensation, Ariel Silver. How are you, Ariel?
I'm good, Nikki. How are you doing?
I'm good. Where are you, in Los Angeles now?
Or are you on the road? I have been on the road for 5 weeks, and my first full day back in LA. I'm so happy to be home.
You know what? What's so crazy? I don't know if you feel like this. Whenever I tour, even if it's just for a week or a couple days or several weeks, the day after when I come home, my body just wants to do nothing. I'm like so worn out that I don't go to the gym. I don't go out to parties. I don't go to nothing. It's like my body just wants to stay home and do nothing. Do you feel like that?
You know what I always want to do when I've been gone for a long time? The first thing I want to do after I get a good night's sleep is start cooking. I miss my kitchen. I miss cooking like a home-cooked meal just made by my own hands with ingredients that I'm fully in control of. Like, I just miss that. And yeah.
What's like a meal that you love to cook when you come home?
Oh my gosh. You know, this is embarrassing because a lot of folks in my community, my friends, they know me as being like a real cook, a baker, because for years and years I did. But then when COVID hit, you know, everybody was learning how to make fresh bread and they were all, you know, everybody else was learning how to do that. And I was like, you know what? You all got it covered. I can stop cooking now. And so for like the last 4 years, everything is just super, super simple, like steamed vegetables, salad, eggs, potatoes, like nothing complex. Just like,
interesting.
Yeah,
I love to cook, but there's only a couple things that I'm really good at. And a lot of it, it's like my family's Indian. So my mom gives me Indian food recipes.
Mm.
And if I can cook them, I'm like, anybody can cook them. So I kind of want to make a little cookbook.
But yeah.
Like, I love cooking. Like, it's one of the things that I wish I was a lot better at, because I'd love to learn French cooking and just learning simple little recipes that go a long way. But I think cooking and music have a lot in common. There's a parallel, because I think with music, when you're crafting something, you're putting spices, you're putting sounds, you're doing chord changes, rhythms. And I think food also has that nuance. You're doing the same thing, but you're adding, you know, different meats, or maybe it's carbs or whatever it is, or vegetables. I love that you love to cook. That's amazing.
Oh, well, first of all, I would love to know how to cook Indian food. Oh my gosh.
Some of it is really amazingly simple. And some of it, from what I've learned, I think I've got like 7 really awesome recipes. But a lot of it is based on ginger, garlic, onion, and chilies. That's mm-hmm. the masala. So it's like, what I've learned is like so many things, like curries come out of that. Or you do like, you know, stir fries out of that, or like vegetables like that. And it's like, wow, this is a very simple kind of like nucleus of where Indian food goes. But it's in everything. So that's what gives it so much. So I'm learning that. It's like, wow. I even called my mom one time and I said, you know what's funny? The first time I cooked with ginger, garlic, onion, and chilies, I'm like, it makes me think of you. Like I immediately think it's my mom's smell. Because when I'd come home from sports or school and she would be cooking, that's what I would smell. So that was the sense memory immediately was like, oh, this smells like home. This smells like my mom cooking in the kitchen. So,
absolutely.
I think cooking has a lot of those like sense memory things. So I love that you love to cook. I didn't know that when we first initially met. But you grew up in Gulf Shores, right?
Well, Yeah, I mean, I grew up all along the East Coast, so I was born on the Gulf of Mexico in Florida, and then lived throughout, you know, my childhood and young adult life all the way up to Massachusetts, places in the middle. I lived in a lot of states on the East Coast. So,
So you said Massachusetts, where, in Boston or in like the suburbs?
Yeah, Boston. I mean, and like areas around Boston, and yeah, all over. Are you, did you live there?
I know a lot of places in Massachusetts just from touring, but
yeah,
I have a friend, one of my best friends lives in Sudbury, and there's another, I've got some friends in, they're like in Dover, New Hampshire, they're like all over different states, but I just love that whole area. It's such a different vibe. I don't know if I could do it during the winter, but I love it in the fall. I love it in the spring. I love it in the summer. I just can't hang in the winter. And I'm
one. I lived there for a long, long time, 11 years, and I am right there with you.
Like, I cannot shovel any more snow or do the blizzard thing. It's just, it's too much.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up here, actually. I grew up in Pasadena, so 5 miles east of Pasadena in Arcadia. But with music, I was always traveling all over, and it's like I've done so much. You've done a lot of the NACA touring, as have I, so you go into the smallest cities and then go into the big cities too. So I just, one of the things I love about music, and I know you can attest to this too, it just allows you to travel and kind of like see so many different markets, cities, cultures. And that's one of the things I love about the US, just because there's so many great, like little pockets of states that you can just kind of like tour together and see all kinds of things that maybe you didn't think you would see. I don't know if you kind of like also route your touring with doing like sightseeing, but I love when I have like a couple hours or a day where I can do some kind of sightseeing along with it. So, so where all did you tour recently in the 5 weeks?
Yeah, I was in Arizona for the first week of it. So I just drove out there from LA, and then I was there for a week, drove back on eclipse day. And then a couple days later flew out to, I flew to Boston, and then I just made my way down to Delaware over a little bit of time. So, you know, one of the things I love about going to the East Coast, but also other places in the country as well, is, but especially the East Coast, I get to visit all of like all the places where I grew up. I get to see old friends and family members, and you know, it's really, that's a really special thing to me. And for years, I stopped touring for a decade. I toured and then I stopped and then I started again. And in those 10 years, I sort of almost forgot that those, like, it sort of felt like all those places just fell into a sinkhole. Like I thought, oh, those are no longer part of my life, and they're just memory. And now I go back to those places. I see my childhood homes. I see my childhood friends. That's awesome. And it's really like, I mean, my heart just fills up so much to get out there. So yeah.
Well, you probably savor it more too, like that you're a little bit older now, and also kind of like you're kind of savoring the experience of touring. And like when you tour, you know, you're making it worthwhile by seeing those friendly faces and seeing those places. Maybe in that 10-year gap, they didn't hold the same value because you didn't have distance from it. You know what I mean? It's like that absence may have built this beautiful homecoming to those places that you probably, if you were touring those 10 years every year, you wouldn't have that. There's no way. You would take it for granted in a different way, you know?
Yeah, that might be true. And I'll say also, in that time that I was not touring, I think that part of the reason I didn't want to tour was because I had moved to California, and I was very curious about the Pacific Coast and really just the beautiful state of California. And so, you know, during that time, I feel like I haven't even scraped the surface of California in the years I've lived here. There's so much here to see.
Have you been to the Sequoias yet?
Yes. That is one place that I've been to a number of times, and oh my gosh.
It's unreal. I went to it, I think, 15 years ago. We just went a couple of days ago. That's why I asked.
Yeah.
It's just like so majestic, and it's like you forget. It's like only 3 hours away, but it's like, my God, it's so beautiful. It's incredible. It's like,
yeah, for sure.
California has a lot of those little kind of like national parks. We kind of are spoiled with oceans and mountains and desert and trees everywhere. It's just, it's awesome. So I love this state. I've got nothing but great things to say about the places to venture here. So if you ever need recommendations, I've been all over this state, and I just love it. There's so much I can just rave about it, but So I want to talk to you about, first of all, I'm curious about this 10-year break that you took. Mm. Tell me what made you take that 10-year hiatus. Mm.
Well, I mean, you might be able to relate to this. I just burned out. I burned out. And, you know, I was on tour. I was touring the country. I was touring with my trio at the time. So we were touring in a van that ran on vegetable oil as fuel. Oh, wow. And, you know, we crossed the country a couple of times. I was still based in Boston. And where was I? Upstate New York. We had gone across the country and we had come back and we were in, I think it was Rochester, New York. And I just remember walking down the street, talking to my dad on the phone before our show. You know, we'd loaded in, we did our sound check. And then I was just, you know, walking down the sidewalk. And I don't remember what I said to him in that phone call, but I remember the feeling of that moment was just like, wow, I'm really tired. And this is really hard. Like, just hard on so many levels. And I don't exactly remember when that date was. It must have been autumn because it wasn't that cold and we were upstate New York. But by the end of the year, I had driven the bass player home to Virginia and had moved to Los Angeles. And I just decided to get a job working behind the scenes in the industry out here. And that's what I did for those 10 years. You know, I didn't think I was ever going to go back. I mean, at first I thought, oh, I just need a little break. I'll recover from this. And then, you know, 5 years went by and I was like, oh, maybe I'm not going to go back. 7 years went by and, you know, I started doing a lot of other stuff. And then right around the 10-year mark, I don't know. I just woke up. I just woke up from this rest that I really needed. And, something changed and I wanted to get back out there, start recording again and playing shows.
Love that.
Yeah.
Do you think touring now has changed for you that now that you took that break and you feel like pacing is a little bit different? Cause I feel like pacing with touring, man, it's everything. I try to never do more than 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks is enough. For me, I'm like, I get enough in that 2 week period. And really ideally a week is great. I don't want to be on the road more than 2 weeks. If I'm on the road for more than 2 weeks, then the road becomes your plane. Mm. You know what I mean? And it's like, you don't have your little spots that you can go and find your, you know, your Zen or, you know what I mean? There's something about, and I love traveling, but traveling with work, I feel like, especially touring, and I've toured a lot, I feel like we're a little bit like traveling salesmen, and that can wear on the soul, the mind. I felt like that when I was touring the most and playing colleges and venues, and I didn't know where I was half the time
or what day of the week it is. Yeah, totally.
It was what was happening in the world. And I was also seeing so many weddings and birthday parties and barbecues that I was missing. Mm. And just feeling like, okay, I'm doing the same thing I love in a different place and to new faces every time. There's not much familiarity. And it became pretty lonely sometimes. Even if I was touring with the band, you just felt like you didn't have your space. And when you were by yourself touring, you felt like you had too much space. So it's like this really kind of like, it's a really delicate balance. And I find that I'm still trying to find that where it's like, can I do more than 2 weeks? I don't think so. I really ideally like to do a week. We're doing a couple dates in the Midwest for some festivals. And I'm like, that'll be a good reminder of like doing it and then pulling back. But I admire the people that can go on the road and do 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks. I've had friends do months. So tell me like how touring is different for you after the 10 years.
Yeah. You mentioned how you like to do a little bit of sightseeing. And I have found that for me, what I really love is finding mom and pop yoga studios.
Awesome.
I practice That's yoga. Awesome. I'm a longtime yoga practitioner. And, you know, back in the day when I used to tour, I had my yoga mat with me, but I never pulled it out. It always just stayed in the van. But now this past tour, I had 3 days Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, where I was just kind of parked in one spot. And I found this wonderful studio. And I just, I did 7 classes in 3 days. I just spent like a lot of time at the studio. I got to know some of the people. It felt good to be in community and not on the go, you know, and just like, you know, it was really lovely. And the other thing I like to do is when I have a day off, to go see live music or to see a show or, you know, I was in New York last year, I think it was last June or something. And I had a night off and I went to go see, a show, you know, and it was just same with when I was in DC, same thing. And that every time I do that, it like, it replenishes, it just fills me up.
That's awesome. Well, you've found a balance with that. I always think of what it costs to go on the road, and it's like it has to offset. You know what I'm talking about, too. It's
absolutely, like, yeah. The economics of touring. Yeah,
the economics of touring is a really fine balance, and it's like what I love about touring with my band. It's like we all have similar interests, so if we're going to do something, we can do something together where it's going to be fun. It's going to be lively. We'll go to a cool restaurant. We'll always make a cool hang of it. But what I find is like it's so hard to have 2 or 3 days off in between dates, because I'm thinking, okay, we're doing something where we're spending money and we're not making those gains either in, you know, spreading the musical seed that we want or just impacting audiences in some way. But I love that you're carving that time out for you and giving yourself that, because it probably makes the experience a little bit more gratifying and you're taking more time for yourself, which is outstanding. I think it's commendable. So,
you know, I mean,
that's amazing.
I mean, it's work, right? We're on the road, we're working, but it's the life that we dreamed of having. And, it's like I'm finding that balance. I was not good at it when I was younger, and I'm much better at just appreciating. I know that it's finite. I know that, you know, I mean, most likely I won't be able to tour, you know, if I live a nice long life, I'm sure at some point in time, I'll just be like, no, this is too hard, sleeping in a different bed every night. And, you know, like I said before, like, you know, eating out, or, you know, just not having your own comforts of home, being around your family, all of that stuff is really, really hard. And right now I like it more, and I find it so meaningful and so gratifying. And, you know, the discomfort is great, but I find the benefits right now are greater. But, you know, when I was younger and doing it, I didn't know how to appreciate it while I was out there. And now it's like I'm looking at the cloudscape. I'm looking at the water. I'm getting that yoga studio or that live music show, or, you know, going to Hadestown on Broadway, whatever it is. And, you know, just like really trying to soak up the adventure of it. You know, because I know that it's not going to last forever. So,
well, and it's also what I love too, and this is one of my favorite parts of touring, are the venues or the audiences. Like, there's something magical about that. Like,
absolutely,
seeing a different venue or a different, you know, group of friends or fans that have either grown with you or grown up with you, like you said, that's what makes touring so great. The hard part is, like, when you do that enough, you're like, oh, I have a family. I've got my own crew. I'm neglecting some of that to do all of that. And there's like this kind of like catch 22. You love it. You love it being on your own adventure, but you also miss home. And I wrote a song a long time ago where it's like, I didn't know where home was. Is it home on the road or is it home here? Because it's like the lines get blurred the more that you tour. It's like when you come home, you're like, I'm finally home. But then you have this itch to go touring again, because it's just what you know. So I love, this is a very outstanding conversation for me, because this is what I always wrestle with. I always wrestle with, should we be going on the road more, or should we be doing more kind of home dates? But let's get to your songs. Let's play some. What do you want to play first?
Oh gosh, this is up to me, huh? You know what, this conversation has so much energy to it. What do you think about playing Ricky Lee? That's an energetic song.
Love it. Let's play. Here's Ricky Lee by Ariel Silver.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Hey! kitchen and I sliced right through the crowd to the lonely room in back with the cinder block shelves and the vinyl stacks. A raspberry hat, tangerine braid, oh, a candle at her fingers casting shadows on the shade.
That was awesome, man. I love the sound, like very Brian Setzer, kind of like just bluesy, soulful, funky, all in the right places. Sounds really cool. Tell me what the influence and inspiration behind that song was.
Oh, okay. I love getting into a process where I'm writing a song a week. Wow. So that, you know, I write alone primarily, and when I'm, you know, there are times when I'll write, you know, for other projects, but for my project, when I'm in this process, you know, I have like this whole methodology that I go through. And so for this particular time period, I was working with a friend of mine. She was just sending me once a week, she was sending me a songwriting prompt. And for this particular week, it was record player. And so I wrote down five memories that I had of vinyl records or a record player or something like that. And I looked at those five things on the list and I sort of honed in on one that had particular resonance in my memory. And I was just thinking about that particular time. And what that was in college, I went to a party and I went, you know, through this party. It was a lot of people smoking and Jägermeister shots and, you know, college party. And I couldn't handle all of that noise and, you know, energy. So I went into the back bedroom and it was a quiet room. And there was this girl sitting on the futon bed and she was sitting next to this stack of vinyl records. And she pulled out this one record, and it was that iconic Ricky Lee record, just Ricky Lee Jones. And she said, "Have you ever heard this before?" You know, and there she's on the cover of the record. She's smoking a clove cigarette. She has her raspberry beret or whatever color it is. And this girl put the record on the turntable, and it was the first time I'd ever heard that record. First time I ever heard Chucky's In Love and all these, you know, it's just such a great record.
Badass, she's so
great. Totally. Yeah, so when my friend sent me this prompt, I was thinking about that first time that I ever heard Ricky Lee Jones, and I just started writing about that party, and that's what turned into the song. And I didn't listen when I was writing the song. I consciously did not put that record on because I was like, "Oh my gosh, like I don't want to write in the style of Ricky Lee Jones. I don't want to copy one of her songs. I don't want to try to emulate her. I just want to capture that feeling for me of when I heard that record for the first time." And so, that was the song that came out. And then I was culling through all of the songs that I had written during this time period with my producer to figure out the 10 that we wanted on the new record, which came out a few months ago. And, this was, you know, I played him a bunch of other songs. Then I was like, you know, I have this other song, and he was like, "Oh, go ahead and play it." And he was like, "That's definitely going on the record." And yeah, I'm so glad he loved it. It came out great.
Yeah, and it's such a, you know what I love too? It's like, I'm a huge fan of Brian Setzer. He's just always just such a great influence. And not a lot of people do that enough. And it's a style of music that I hope never goes out, because it's like, it's almost like swinging blues. And it's like the perfect marriage of like jazz and blues. And it's just one of my favorite styles of music. So I love that you're bringing and breathing life back into that style, because it's like one of my favorite styles of music. So it's just rad. So I love it.
Awesome.
Two thumbs up. It was awesome.
And then going...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, going back to yoga, my yoga world, the dancer in that video, Nicole Riviere, she and I, back in 2009, we did our first yoga teacher training together. Oh, and awesome. So, and we became friends back in 2009. She was a dancer, and like me, you know, I was taking a break from music at the time, and she was taking a break from dance, and we were kind of on the same burnout path that had brought us to do this teacher training. And for both of us, it took all those years to come back to music. And she went through exactly the same thing, where dance reawakened in her life. And I called her up when I wanted to make this music video, and I was like, "Is there any chance, you know, that you would that you would do this, that you'd be interested?" And she was like, "Hell yeah."
You know, I think as creators, we tend to create in a way that we're not excited about a lot of the times. And there's a lot of times where we kind of take that for granted in a way that it's not sitting behind a cubicle, but it becomes a job a little bit. So it kills a lot of the beauty and fun and love, and it kills your energy sometimes. So I'm sure every creator, dance, doesn't matter what it is, when you start doing things that you're not into, it kills the vibe. So that when you do something with friends where it's like collaborating, rejuvenates why we do this in the first place. You know, it's very delicate. So I have my gripes about this. I was actually talking to an old blues guitarist about it last night, because he said he came back after touring in England for 2 years. He quit. He said he put his guitars and he got a job at UPS. And I was like, and this is like one of the, he was playing guitar for Michael Jackson on the Thriller tour, was doing all this crazy stuff. And I was so shocked that he told me that, but he's like, it just happens. Like you get beat up by the industry, or like the, how everything unfolds, or like the wear and tear of the travel, or even just the wear and tear of like playing out. It's like a physical thing that you can get burned out. And dancers go through the same thing. It's like,
totally,
you don't realize what a dancer's feet go through, you know what I mean? Or their bodies, because everything's about that to them. So it's like, yeah, I love that you both came back to it, and it was a collaboration that also brought you back to want to do it again. You know what I mean? That makes it really, really cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And then the cinematographer for that, and he also ended up editing it too, he's her now husband, but at the time, and so Sasha Riviere, he's a phenomenally talented cinematographer, and I have always wanted to work with him. And, you know, so I called the two of them up. I was like, "What do you think?" And so it was really like a really beautiful, you know, three-way collaboration for that video. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's amazing. That's so rad. Very cool. Well, I love that you always take time to figure out the style that you want to write in, figure out the lyrics, figure out like melodies. When you're writing, do you think you need little muses, or is it a word that triggers it? Or like, what's your inspiration? What's your source that you kind of get ignited by?
Yeah. You know, going back to that Ricky Lee idea, you know, after I wrote those five memories and then I started just free writing about that one night, that party that I went to, and then I went back and so like without my guitar in hand, just a journal and a pen, just free wrote for a few pages about that night, as many details, just trying to come up with like, you know, what would I really love setting. And so I really wanted to like rebuild that world that I had been in that particular night. And so I just, you know, wrote about that. And then I had a whole bunch of verbs and nouns to work with, you know, like after I was done. And that was when I picked up my guitar and just started, you know, playing around. I don't remember the exact moment that, you know, it came together, or that it, you know, was, you know, the, you know, in the blues form or anything like that. But, you know, but that was that. And, I'm trying to think, because I'm going to ask you, you're going to ask me what song should we play next, and so I'm already thinking about it, and I'm trying to remember for the next song, Ghost Ships, I'm trying to think of what was the seed?
Yeah, what was the inspiration behind it?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember like what the very, very beginning of it was.
It immediately makes me think of Goonies. When you mentioned Ghost Ship, I'm like, Goonies, whatever it is, it's got to be something to do with Goonies, but go on.
Well, should I talk about it first, or do you want to play it first?
Let's talk about it, yeah.
Let's talk about it. Well, it's a song about journeys not taken, and it's a song about...
Chills, that's very cool.
Yeah, I was thinking about, you know, I was thinking about the first person that I ever really loved, and you know, my first big relationship, and how we thought that we were going to be together forever. And then we weren't. We broke up a few years later and we went our separate ways. And yet in my memory, you know, it's like we have all of these, you know, back then I was imagining the future, and now I'm living my real future, but I was thinking about these other ghost ships, these other possible futures that I didn't actually live, but I had once imagined I might live. And the term, the word, or the phrase ghost ships, that came from a writer, Cheryl Strayed, in her book, Tiny Beautiful Things, which is a collection of essays. And one of her essays, it's not about the same thing that this song is about, but it's about that same idea of, you know, you can't be on two separate paths at the same time. And in this essay, she talks about how, you know, that other path that you don't take is out there somewhere on a ghost ship, you know. So that was where the title came from.
That's very cool. Let's play it. Here's Ghost Ship by Ariel Silver.
Forever about a blue house in a magazine, the orange flames of maple trees in fall. We'd fix the cellar, piano in the living room, a bookcase and curtains in the hall. I made a scrapbook in my mind, a future time. The last nor'easter froze us to the core. Or maybe youth. We hadn't lived enough to see the way that love can leave you wanting more. By summer we were through. Out to sea on ghost
What an amazing music video and song, vocal, melody. Tell me a little bit about this music video for you.
Okay, the music video. Okay. Okay, so the song, I remember the seed of it. In the opening shot of the music video, you see a magazine on a table, and there's a photo in the magazine. And that when I saw that shot, I remembered that the seed of that song was actually a flash story, a flash essay that I had written a number of years ago and had published. And that magazine is actually that we used as the prop for that shot. That's the magazine that the essay is published in. And I had taken that essay and then, I don't know, somehow it transformed into the song. I wasn't done writing about the thing.
There's stories all over this. And
it's yeah.
The whole vibe of like other paths of destiny that aren't visible, but they're there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just really well done. Everything's concept is so cool. Keep going.
So that story is called The Sleeping Porch. There's no mention of ghost ships. It's not, it doesn't use that metaphor in there. But the music video, the animator and the director of the video, his name is Damon Wellner. He's from Cape Cod and he lives here in Los Angeles. He's worked on stop motion animated videos for Sia and Michael Bublé. And he's worked on those videos with, this goes back to yoga, with another woman that I know. She was a yoga student of mine for a long time. And when I recorded this song, I loved it. And I could not get out of my mind this like 13 point, basically like storyboard idea, you know, for this music video. And I just knew it had to be stop motion. And so I called up my friend and she introduced me to Damon Wellner, who's ridiculously talented. And he just put so much creative thought. I mean, the music video is really, you know, I wrote the 13 points of the, you know, that I wanted the storyline of the video to be, but he just made it, he created that paper world. He was able to bring it to life. And I'm just like, I'm in awe of him. Yeah. So.
Yeah, especially with the ghost ships at the end, you know, you just see, I mean, he really painted in between the lines and kind of created stories within stories just for how you unfold that whole thing.
Yeah, and it just like, it's like every, I mean, that one point, you know, where the screen goes black and then you're just watching the origami boat, you know, getting folded up. And then that, you know, that's really the protagonist through the rest of the video. And, you know, when I talked to him the first time, I was like, I don't know. I just imagine there's this origami boat and there, you know, there's this picture of the blue house and, you know, this is it. And I don't know how he translated it into a real, filmmakers are just astounding to me. Cause I do not, you know, I think in words and music and melody and all that stuff, but I do not know how they translate that to the screen. It's insane.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like the highest medium in some ways, because they're taking your visuals and making stories and putting music to it or whatever it is. It's like they're marrying all the things to make a story that is usually in long form, but even in the short form ones, I'm like, this is amazing. It can be incredible. Let's go back to when you started to play the guitar.
Okay.
What was the reason, like, what was the moment of zen for you that got you into music? Was it a family member that was playing or singing or active in music, or was it a song on the radio? What made you want to become a songwriter?
Oh, well, I'm a classically trained woodwind player first.
Oh, awesome.
Clarinet? Clarinet was my primary one, but I played oboe and saxophone and Renaissance woodwinds as well in college. So, so as a musician, I started out, I played a little violin when I was even younger than that, but really it started with me for winds. But way before that, my dad, he was young when I was born. He was like 23 years old, and he was just this dude with a acoustic guitar, you know, sitting around and playing songs by Paul Simon and John Denver and Joan Baez and, you know, all these like really great troubadour songwriters, Joni Mitchell, etc. And so when I was born, you know, he was just that dude with the acoustic guitar and the baby girl, you know, sitting at his feet. And we would sing together. And, you know, when I was 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, you know, we'd sit around and he'd play all these songs. And I did not learn how to play guitar from him, but I learned an appreciation of the song. I didn't know who the songwriters were. I just knew my dad sang these songs. And so I remember going to summer camp at some point in time, and we were all sitting around a fire, and some dude with a guitar, you know, starts playing American Pie, and everybody's singing along. And I'm like, how do you know this song? Like, I didn't know that everybody, this is my dad's song. How does everybody know it? You know, so that was interesting. And then in college, I was studying classical woodwinds. I was playing clarinet in the orchestra and in chamber groups, and I was playing Renaissance woodwinds. So recorders, you know, soprano, alto, awesome. Tenor, bass recorders, and other.
Penny whistles? Were you playing penny whistles?
Never played penny. I don't think I've ever played a penny whistle.
A real sounding penny whistle is.
Yeah.
It's just a beautiful
sound. Yeah, their fingers just fly, right?
It's a crazy sound. But
I
played a little clarinet when I was in middle school, so I have a massive appreciation for a great woodwind player. So I'm sure you were very skilled. Was there a composer that you loved more than others? I actually studied opera in school, so I was like way into classical music. I actually thought that was going to be my path. So I have my composers that I love, but who are some of the composers you used to love?
Well, for the clarinet, Aaron Copland wrote this awesome clarinet concerto. Really awesome. You know, so I loved that. There were so many pieces, but really I felt like the Renaissance music was really what moved me emotionally. You know, classical music and contemporary classical was very fun. But I was very moved by the earlier music, medieval music, Renaissance music.
It was pre-Baroque,
exactly. Baroque also was so fun because, you know, with Bach and, you know, all the scales and arpeggios, but with Renaissance music, you really got that four-part counterpoint, you know, that.
Well, you could also see how it influenced Bach, you know, like Bach.
Absolutely.
Usually influenced by that, you know, so all that counterpoint is because of that music.
Absolutely. But there, you know what it is? I think that in that earlier music, there's a hollowness to it. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, it's also a simplicity because there's no drums.
There's sometimes a little percussion, but yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I think that's what makes it so kind of like gentle, moving, and there's a calmness. When I hear it, it's like, I just feel like calm. Like, oh, okay, I should be in a Shakespearean outfit. lounging in the wild grass. Like,
that's right. Totally. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Kind of vibe. It's like you immediately picture that because it's, that's the sound and vibe of it, you know, which I love. You know?
That's exactly right. Yeah, whenever I watch, like, you know, movies that take place in days of old, you know, and they're dancing on the dance floor, and the men and women are not touching, you know, but they're like come close and then they back away, and I that's the music that I really loved. And it was in college that I bought my first acoustic guitar, $75 Montana guitar. I didn't know how to play, but I was taking a lot of art classes too, and I painted the guitar. That was like, I think, my way of like being with the instrument, you know. I didn't think I was going to play it, but I wanted to paint on the surface of it. And so I did, and then I learned a couple of chords. And as soon as I knew, you know, how to put my fingers on the fretboard just to form, you know, two or three chords immediately, because I think what it is that when you're playing a woodwind instrument, your mouth is occupied. You can't sing, right? But as soon as you pick up a guitar, all of a sudden your hands are what are making the music on the instrument, and your mouth is free to sing words and lyrics. And I had kept journals my whole life. I'm a lifelong journaler. And I think it was in picking up a guitar that it just opened up this world where I could marry music and words, and I could create that rather than
see a vehicle. You're like, oh, all these journals are for a reason. I can put it to song.
It all made sense. And, you know, and I was hurting on the inside, you know, I was like, you know, 17, 18 years old and, you know, in some kind of emotional distress about something, you know, probably yeah, many things.
That natural. It's
like, trying to make sense of the world, you know? And I just, it came, I was able to express that pain or that confusion, or like, you know, as Rilke says, I could live the questions, not just by playing music or journaling. I could, in this, suddenly I could sing words and use words to express it, but I could emote with the music, you know?
Well, I love that because like for me, it was opera. That was like my thing. And it was like, you learn librettos and like you learn this ultimate form of literature. And then you see it modernized with a Paul Simon or some songwriter that James Taylor or somebody like that, where you're like, oh, this is where it's come to. And it just made me fall in love with words in a new way. It made me fall in love with melodies in a new way. And it's like, it is where it's at. Like, it is to me still the ultimate art form. And I'm going to share something with you that a magician told me at NACA. So we did this conference and we both performed. And I went up to him afterwards. I was like, man, your show was amazing. And he was like, man, your show was amazing. And I said, but man, you're a magician. And he stopped me and he said, but you are the real magician. He said, I can show you illusions all day long if I pull things out of my sleeve or pull something out of your ear or whatever. But he's like, it's all tricks. He's like, the real magicians are these musicians and songwriters who pull a song out of thin air. And I was like, oh my God, I love that. And I was like, it's kind of true. It's like we create these songs out of thin air that weren't there 5 minutes before, 6 months before, whatever. And then they just pop out. So it's like,
yeah.
It made me realize that there's something magical about songwriters, especially, or musicians that just write melodies or write parts, whatever it is, because we live for that moment to create something out of nothing. And then all of a sudden it's there and it's like, oh, we now cultivate this thing. And it's kind of an amazing art form for that reason. It's like, we look for this thing. I mean, it's amazing that you have the discipline to write every week, because I'm like, part of me is like, I don't know if I could sit and just try to conjure something every week and be that disciplined about it, because I don't know if it'll come. You know what I mean? I think I ideally like to, but I just,
well, let me say though, that I go through these periods of time where I'm writing a song a week, but I am not always writing a song a week, you know, especially like, you know, I'm kind of mentally preparing to get back into that phase because I want to start working on the songs for the next album.
Yeah.
You know, and so I've been mentally preparing because just like touring is exhausting, when I'm in that kind of phase, I don't get any sleep. I am up all night because I'm working on the song before I go to bed. And then all night long, my subconscious is working on this song. And then I wake up early in the morning and I go back to working on the song. And I'm like, I'm getting so nitty gritty about every, you know, every word, every syllable, every this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, it's like after I go through a few months of doing that, I wish I could do it all the time, but it's just too tiring. And I can't do it when I'm on tour.
I think of it like a big wheel. It's like, I need to write so that I can record,
That
I can perform so that I can teach. It's like all these things are like, they're all part of it. It's like I learn in every part of those things.
Yeah.
And it's like they all give me different parts of the wheel, but it keeps it all turning and it keeps my mind kind of like moving forward. But I think there's no greater part of this road and journey and wheel than the writing. Like, that's your moment with music and nobody else around, and nothing comes in between that. There is nothing greater than when that song comes and you get to create and cultivate that song and hear it before anybody gets to hear it. That's like, I think probably the greatest gift of music is like, this is mine now for now, but my goodness, this is good enough for everybody to hear. And that's why we make records and record these songs and do that. And I think it's just a tremendous gift. So keep writing. Let's get to your next song What are we playing next?
You know, it's so funny. You asked for three videos, and so I gave you two from the newest album, Watershed. And for the third video, instead of giving you another video from Watershed, I gave you a video for a song that came out on the album before, A Thousand Tiny Torches. And I didn't know that we were going to be talking about food. I probably should have given you the other video has me making pie on screen. That's so awesome. You'll have to watch that later. It's But this song, actually the video was shot by the same filmmaker, the video that we're going to see, and also the one that I didn't send you. And this is for a song called What Really Matters. So it was off of A Thousand Tiny Torches, which was released in 2020.
Love this. Here's What Really Matters by Ariel Silver.
Changing, then you feel the devil fighting for your
So good. Ariel, you're such a killer songwriter. Seriously.
Thank you, Nikki.
It's so good. All your songs are so eclectic, so honest, so real, melodic, hooky, all the things. And you know what? I got to tell you, I had you on one of those Songwriter in the Rounds.
Yeah.
And you turned to me right afterwards. You're like, this was really special. And I'm like, this is why I do these rounds, because of songwriters like yourself. It's like, this is what this is all about. The community of songwriters and having stories to tell, having melodies that people should hear, and creating stuff that people need to know about. So where can people find you if they want to find your music online or on YouTube or wherever? Give us all the info.
You know what? The portal to the whole Ariel Silver universe is at arielsilvermusic.com. And actually, arielsilver.com works as well. That's actually the bigger portal to like yoga and writing and music. But Ariel Silver Music or Ariel Silver, either way, .com.
I love that. You got both of them pointing to you. You're like,
that's this right.
Thing, it's all right here. Here's the hub. Well, Ariel, you are a talent to be reckoned. Like, you are a talent the world should know, and you have an unlimited pass to come on Wake Up Hollywood every time you have a new record or something.
Oh, so, thank you.
In it, and I'm going to have you back in about 9 or 10 months also. So remember the songs you played, because we're going to have you back, because I just love your songs. I love your videos. You're a great songwriter, and you're a wonderful friend, and I'm glad we crossed paths, because this is what it's all about, the songwriting community. Needs more artists like yourself. So keep writing. Get back to those songs a week. We need them. We need
those. That's right. Thank you so much, Nikki. This has been really fun. What a great conversation. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Likewise. On behalf of Ario, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Check out Ario Silver's music at ariosilvermusic.com or ariosilver.com. Peace, love, and hair grease. Let's do it.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.